Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we get together and discuss this spring's progress for our area row crops, as well as an update on area forages and livestock. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Looking at these show notes here, this makes the 112th time that we have put a show together.
112.
It's amazing.
That's few, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing that it's amazing we've lasted this long, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I remember having this discussion, I think, with Vicky one day, that the national average of, like, podcast episodes before they play out is, like, less than 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the vast majority of them out there. So the fact that we've got people that keep listening every week and
we sure appreciate it. Keep wanting to learn.
That's exactly right. We appreciate everybody and tell your friends about us.
Yeah, absolutely. We do appreciate it. And yesterday I was sitting at my desk and trying to get caught up on some, that dreaded paperwork that none of us like to do and reports and been out of the office a good bit. And so I was sitting there working on that and my phone buzzed and picked it up, and it was a producer from here in Webster County, and just out of the blue, he texted and said, you know, I'm really enjoying those podcasts. He said, y'all do a really good job. He said, but it's just really interesting. I just want y'all to know I appreciate you doing it. And, I mean, you know, that means a lot to us because, one, you know, somebody's listening, right?
That's right.
But we've always wanted to put out information that was useful. Yeah. We want to have fun. We want you to enjoy listening to it because you enjoy, you know, you can tell we're having fun. But also, I mean, we really want to be able to help our listeners. And when we hear from some of ours, it kind of, well, makes you want to keep going.
You know, a lot of our audience is here in Kentucky. And when you look at the statistics of where our audience is, we're all across the country. Folks are tuning in and want to hear a little bit about production ag in Kentucky and probably compare to how it relates to their state. There was a long time when our audience was at least 50% in the state of Kentucky, but right now it's only about 35%, and that's because it's grown so much across the country.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing, and I hope we continue to grow. I hope we continue to bring a product to our listeners that they enjoy to listen to, and hopefully they're learning something. I mean, we don't always, necessarily get on a subject matter that you enjoy because we don't always get on a subject matter I enjoy.
Sure.
But there's always that opportunity, you know, you can skip over that one and go listen to another one, and so that's what makes it great. We're coming up on some that hopefully we're going to tape here in the next little bit that I really enjoy. And so, you know, those will be a lot of fun for me and maybe not so much for Vicky, the grain girl.
Oh, no, I'm becoming more of a livestock girl.
You know, Jay, she's kind of rolling into that whole, I had this video yesterday sent to my phone that she was working the head gate, catching cows and different things. And, hey, we may make a livestock girl out of her yet.
I have come a long way.
Yeah.
Come a long way. I enjoy it too.
And that and serving her role at the state level on the state youth dairy show at the state fair has become a very important part of getting those cows checked in and helping put on the shows. And
in all seriousness, I have really enjoyed learning something new. I know y'all we're kidding around and y'all are kind of poking fun at me, but and that's okay. I don't mind at all. Yeah. But I do, in all seriousness, I have really enjoyed learning more and being more comfortable around livestock because, you know, it is 100% true that I was not a livestock person and didn't even want to be around them, not because I didn't like them. I was nervous because I had never been around them.
Yeah.
But just over the years and learning from meetings and stuff, but more than that is learning from folks like y'all, you know, being on this. I've learned a lot, but just in programs that we have done together and being with specialists, I've learned a lot, and I'm really enjoying this livestock side.
You know, taking what David said earlier about enjoying some shows more than others or some topics more than others.
Sure.
We recorded one earlier this week that was about forages with Dr. Ray Smith. It will actually be airing. By the time folks hear this, it will have already aired.
Sure.
But anything forages related are those shows that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And those are those things where you don't look at notes. You just sit and have that conversation. And it's fun because it's kind of your background. You know, it's what you've been involved with for a lot of years. So.
Yeah, that's right. You know, looking back this spring, we've you know, we hadn't had a lot of opportunity, just the three of us, to really sit down and have a podcast and talk about some things that have gone on. And Vicki and I have done some traveling, and we went to Washington, D.C. And got to visit with our legislators and from Kentucky and attended a leadership conference. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt that Washington, D.C. is not my cup of tea. You know, I enjoyed visiting. We got an opportunity to go to Arlington Cemetery, and that was just awe-inspiring, just, you know, just the sacrifices that those folks had made for our country. Really, if that doesn't get you, you know, in the fields, it won't, nothing gets you in the fields.
Yeah, that's right.
But then we had an opportunity to go to the leadership conference and then go visit our legislators. And we had a really good visit, but I can say that the Ubering, and thank goodness for Vicki, because she is the Uber queen. Only one time, Jay, did I have a problem. We Ubered in these big Yukons and Suburbans, and which is called Uber Black, that a friend of mine told us about, and I told Vicki, and so that's how we Ubered. So we thought on the morning of the congressional visit we were going to Uber Black.
Yep.
And pulled in. And even gave us the name of our driver, and his name was Sugar.
That is true.
That's a fact.
That was his name.
And pull it up, and what kind of car was that? A Tesla. Electric Tesla. Thank goodness I took my Dramamine on the way to the Capitol. Had I not, I was ready to get out and walk. It was the worst ride I had ever had in my life.
And he's telling the truth, because we're driving down through there, and y'all know me. In the mornings especially, I'm rattling. And
talking 100 miles a minute, and I'm just trying to keep from getting
sick. I got to get all of my words out before, you know, we get up there and have to calm down a little bit. But anyway, I wasn't looking over at him. I'm just talking, and then I look over at him, and I said, oh, you're about to get sick. I'm going to shut up. And I didn't say another word till we got stopped. because he was not enjoying that ride at all.
I think the whole electric car thing, the whole, you know, of course, it was a lot of start and stop traffic. And, I mean, that electric car would turn on and cut off. And, I mean, it would really, really kind of made you feel like you were going back and forth. And like somebody that gets on the gas and gets on the brake every two seconds, you know, it kind of made you feel like that. But we had some really good visits that day and enjoyed that visit. And, you know, so that was one of the things that we got to do in between all the planting and everything. So, you know, I think we had some really good visits talking about extension and the work that extension does. And, you know, there were people there from just about every state doing the same thing we were doing. I was remarkable how crowded it was going in and out of the different Capitol buildings to talk to our legislators.
And how busy they were. So if you've never been up there to visit, you know, it is something good to do. Now, it's a busy place, a lot of traffic, and but when you get up there and you're scheduled for visits and you're standing outside the door waiting, you really see just how busy those folks are and how many people are going in and out of those doors, because they were in session when we were up there. And so it was a really busy day, and you also see and appreciate their staffers, because sometimes we don't realize how much of an integral part they are in their offices and in their district offices. But
and they're kids. They're kids.
They are very young.
When I say kids, they're probably 25 to 32, maybe.
Yeah.
But they're young kids that are in there taking notes when you're talking to them about the subject, whatever subject you're talking to them about.
And keeping the schedules and making sure that the members are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. And it's really something to see. I'm like, David, I couldn't live there, don't have any desire to live there, but I do like to visit the city just because there's so much history there. Yeah. And
probably more black suburbans per square inch than any place on the planet.
I agree.
I've never seen so many black suburbans in all my life. I mean, they're just everywhere. You know, when we actually came by the Pentagon after coming back from Arlington, and they had a lot full of black suburbans and other black vehicles that I'm sure that they use for whatever purposes. But, you know, really, really interesting city to visit. And, you know, Vicky and I got to see some of the real life stuff as we did a little walking around downtown and that type of thing. So.
Yeah, it was a good trip, and, you know, we always encourage our listeners to be an advocate and to, you know, really advocate for agriculture and tell the story. And so David and I, we tried to do our very best at telling Kentucky agriculture and Kentucky Extension story while we were up there at this conference. And
I let Vicky do most of the talking, Jay. I just kind of chimed in, you know.
Let her.
Well,
I
volunteered her. No, I kind of volunteered her after the first stop. She did such a good job. I said, hey, why don't you just do this? I'll just hang back. I'll interject when necessary. And that's kind of what I did. It worked out good. It really did.
You sound like a coworker I used to have. She's going to let me do this, let me do that.
Well, it was an enjoyable trip, good conference. Glad I was able to go. And
yep.
Maybe somebody will have the opportunity to go next year.
Hopefully somebody else will get the opportunity to go next year.
Next year, that's right.
When you look at the demographics of our listeners, we had this past week 4 listeners from the District of Columbia. So somebody inside that beltway.
Well, give a shout out to Congressman Guthrie. His staffer remembered that we had him on our podcast and talked to him a little bit about that. So, you know, and he and Representative Comer are the two that we actually got to see and talk to. Everybody else was staff. And then Hal Rogers, who is in Eastern Kentucky.
Right.
The three of them are the ones we actually got to speak with for just a minute. But the most of the talking that you did was with staffers.
And, again, I would encourage folks, if you haven't gone to your own state capitol, I would encourage you to do that, too. I didn't realize that there were so many people. I talked to a lot of people that say, I've never even been to Frankfort for Kentucky. Yeah. And I understand that. But if you do get the opportunity to visit your state capitol, I would encourage folks to do that. And if you get the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. sometime, I would encourage that, too. If you don't want to go during the busiest time of the year, then do not go in the spring, because that's when it is really busy because of the cherry tree blossoms. And it is very pretty. It was very pretty up there when we were there, but it was also very busy. So,
well, you know, you think about it, and we talk about building relationships on this program, you know, and when you have a problem and you're able to call your legislator, or you're able to do something like that and advocate for whatever, you know, whether it's agriculture or whatever, you know, I think it's very important to build those relationships. And that's what a lot of that was about, is about building that relationship with that person or with those staffers to help you when you do have a problem. You can call up there and say, hey, we need some help.
Yeah.
It's one of the most important parts of that relationship, is having it established before you actually need them.
Right.
I promise you, like anybody else, they're going to be a lot more attentive to the issues that you bring to them when you bring good things to them too. You know, they want to come. They want to come when they're out and in their districts and eat meals with you and take part in festivals, local festivals, and things like that. And that's all part of that two-way street that we all enjoy by having them up there.
And I will say, and then I know we'll go on to something else, but I will say, when we left there, and we was getting ready to head back home, and of course, you know, you have a little time there in the airport, you know, when you're flying, you have a little downtime there. And I did tell David, I said, walking away from this, my goal for Vicky leaving is to try to, you know, send more information to the district offices.
Absolutely.
For those folks, to let them know what we're doing. I realize that they can't come to all of our extension meetings. I'm not going to send them something for every extension meeting that I have here, but some of those meetings, because they want to know. That's the thing that I did. I guess we all know it, but we I saw it, that they really do want to know what's going on in the districts where they serve. And so, and we don't, it just, they've got district offices set up in different places. And that's a goal of mine this year after attending that conference, is to try to do that a little bit more, just to keep them aware of what's going on in Extension, not just Webster County, but what's going on in Extension. And I think that's important for all of us to do. So,
and, you know, that was a big part of why y'all were up there, was you're advocating for Extension as a whole.
Yep.
You weren't up there promoting our individual programs. You were up there just to advocate for our Extension service, for what we do for all Kentuckians. And as a group, I appreciate y'all going and carrying that message. It would not be my place to do so. I'm kind of like David. I don't know. Y'all are a lot more important than I am, so y'all get to go on things like that. But y'all go to airports, and that's your ticket for getting in places like.
Well, we did have somebody that drove. We did have somebody from our delegation that drove.
She did.
Oh, I drive
from Eastern Kentucky, you know, and she took about 8 hours.
I think she said it took eight hours. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so there is a way. There is an avenue for you to go, Jay, if you'd like to go. But that was it. Was interesting. I enjoyed it, and. You know, I was really dreading that. Glad I went. Glad I did that. And glad I got to see the things that I saw.
Yeah.
And
it ought to be big on anybody's list to get a chance to get up there and see the inner workings.
Yep.
And if you do make it up in that part of the world, make sure you make time to go into Arlington National Cemetery, because it is very something that I think we – all should go to if we're in that part of if we're in Washington D.C. area, then make the trip over, because like David said, if it doesn't touch you, then you better be checking something, because
you ain't got much of a heartbeat.
Yeah, something's wrong.
Yep, absolutely. So, well, what's going on in agriculture y'all's way, guys?
It is spring. We're recording this actually on the first day of May, and it'll air in a couple of weeks, but up until right now, we've started getting a little rain, but it's been pretty dry around the western part of the state, depending on where you're at. There have been some recorded rainfalls in some areas that are pretty encouraging. But I think, David, the way you said it earlier is that's not everywhere.
Yep.
We've had a lot of the inner pockets of our area that have been pretty dry.
Yeah.
And for the grain guy who's trying to get a crop in the ground, it's been pretty much smooth sailing. They've not had many interruptions. They've had enough moisture in the ground to germinate that seed and get it up and going. But for a lot of our forage producers that might be fertilizing pasture or, you know, fertilizing hay, they need a little rain to do something with that nitrogen.
Yeah, you know, was it day before yesterday? I guess it was day before yesterday. We had 2 inches and 3/10, and that's the most rain. That's more rain than we had the previous month. The previous 30 days anyway. I know after we put fertilizer on, we didn't get a lot of rain. We got like a half inch, maybe an inch at the most after we put fertilizer on. And that's about all the rain we would get. We'd get about a half a tenth every now and then. You know, everywhere else was getting an inch and a half. And right in my little pocket there in Gracie, Kentucky, we were not getting any rain. And so it was pretty dry. And it soaked it up. It really did. Because most of the time in a 2-inch rain, we'll have some water standing in some places that normally water will gather, and there wasn't any, so it was pretty dry.
David kind of lives on the western side of Christian County, and I live kind of in an opposite corner, in the northeast corner, going towards north and east out of Hopkinsville, and it's been dry there as well.
Yep.
Up until this rain that you just got, I only got about 1.25 inches out of that, which was great.
Yeah.
It was well needed. It came the way 1 inch of rain ought to come.
Right.
Nice and slow, and every bit of it went into the ground. I don't think there was a bit run off.
No.
And that was very, very well needed all around. But that just goes to show that there's some pockets that are a little bit behind others, and may take several of these little rains to get them caught up.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about, and I don't want to jump over what Vicky was going to talk about with rainfall, but you know, you think about planting progress, you know, where I'm from, we're way ahead of where McLean County is, and because McLean County, number one, they've been getting some rains along,
right?
And so all the planting, we're not near far along planting, because I thought we were going to be ahead. for a while because folks started planting corn in McLean County before some corn was planted in Christian County.
Fairly early. Thought,
yeah, and I was like, this is not normal. But anyway, I think the rain has slowed them down up there and kind of gone back to a normal pattern more so than what it was.
Yeah,
I just looked up some rainfall totals kind of in our area a little bit. I just looked up the mesonet, you know, for most of or a lot of counties in Kentucky, we have those mesonet sites. And so I was just curious. So I just looked up and compared like March of 2023 to March of 2024, for instance. And so for Webster County in March of 2023, we had 7.7 inches of rain. And you compare that to March of 2024, we got 2.2 inches of rain. So, it, you know, every year is different. And in April, for Webster County, we've gotten 5.3 inches of rain is the average. But like you said, that's at the mesonet station too. That may not be so true for what's going on in other parts of the county, but, and then April of last year, we had 2.4 inches of rain in April. And so, you know, we know every year that we can't control the weather. We know that. And every year is different. But sometimes it's just interesting to go back and look and to see where we were at this time a year ago. And just to see the differences and see the swings in that. And so like when you were talking about with McLean County starting earlier, that's why.
I was shocked. I really was. When I saw some of the corn being planted, I was really shocked. And some of those could have been beans as well. So, you know, as we get into planting season and we're starting to plant beans earlier and earlier every year, you know, so some of those could have been beans. I have seen some really good stands of beans so far. You know, so I don't know exactly how things are going to pan out, but so far, so good. I mean, everything looks really good so far.
Well, in McLean County, I looked up some of your data, too, and in March of 2024, you all had an inch of rain in all of March. So it was dry.
Yeah.
And so they was able to go in there and start. I would dare say there might be some folks that planted before April. It may have been just setting your drill, but.
Right.
But some early, because it was dry.
And there's a few folks that are done planting corn, but I'd say for the most part, we're in that probably 70% range is my guess on corn planting. Soybeans, full season beans, probably 50, you know, in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's been really good. I mean, ground's been in good shape. I mean, it's been probably as mellow as it's been in several years. It's just been so dry. You know, we hadn't had just enough rain to kind of soften things back up. And then in a day or two, it's dry again. You go right back at it.
So. Yeah. Well, and like you said, the driving around here, you know, the soybean stands look good. Actually, more soybeans up than corn. And you know, we've talked about that before. I mean, it's really made a difference on here. I mean, you just, before everybody planted their corn early, and then sometimes if you got finished early, you'd hold off a little bit and then start planting beans. And now you got folks planting beans, and even some of them are planting beans and planting all their beans then going to corn. You know, so it's really a shift over the last few years.
Seed comparison from a soybean to a corn, they will stand just a little bit cooler soil temperatures than the corn will. My big concern or question has always been is once it comes up out of the ground and before it really takes off and starts growing, you've got all your growing point above the ground, and we still, it's at a time when we're still at a risk for frost. And I feel like the advantages are out there that you can gain, but man, one little change in temperature one night could make a big difference.
Well, you know, last year, Jay, if you remember that, there's one field that Jay and I both looked at, and it got frosted on, but
pretty heavy frost.
Yeah, and those beans survived, and I don't know what they yielded, but they looked good throughout the growing season.
It was a little field right by the side of the road by an exit that we both were passing all the time, and when they got frosted, you know, David texted me, and he said, they look pretty chilly this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just expected over the next couple of days for them to go down. And
yeah, I figured it would have gotten replanted, but
never did.
No, and then they came out and did all right. So, you know,
was real good looking beans at one point
of
the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So you just don't never know. I think there's so many things we don't know. You know, we think we know lots, and we do know lots, but I think there are lots of things that we don't know that, you know, just like wheat in the past, you know, there's been several years that we thought we got froze out, and there were people that were destroying wheat crops, and other people took those wheat crops to harvest, and it was 70 bushels.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I think you just don't know how resilient that plant is, and it's a lot of things we don't know as much as we do know.
Yeah, I think, too, a lot of it depends upon how cold it got and how long. Like, how long was it really, really cold? And I think that makes a big difference sometimes on the damage. But I think other times, sometimes I think maybe it has to do with other stressors going on. And if that plant's really is not really under stress that much, sometimes it seems like they can handle – I can just handle something like that, where if there was other things going on, you might see more damage. And I think with our varieties now, they're so much better than what they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, they're just, I don't know. It's like you said, you can't predict anymore. You can't really predict if there's going to be damage when you get those late freezes or late cold snaps.
You know, I've seen wheat, especially down there in the part of the world where David and I live, I've seen wheat killed that they never had any intentions of it becoming a crop. It was simply there as a cover crop, and the whole idea was to get it off and done in time before it used up much of the nutrients that would go into the corn production.
Sure.
So it's just always the thought that's out there. Used it more as a cover crop than anything else.
Yeah. Well, luckily this year we haven't had any of those to amount to anything. I mean, we've had some cool spells, but I don't think it's been anything that's been earth-shattering that's going to damage any of our crops. So, I mean, so far so good. Everything looks really good. Wheat looks good. Corn doesn't look as good as the soybeans do. I think the soybeans look better than I had expected. But I have seen some corn that I don't think looks very good. You know, maybe planted it a little too wet, or I don't know what the situation was, but it doesn't look like it has a very good stand.
Well, we talked about being a little bit behind on rain. One of the things that we haven't had a lot of, even though we hadn't had rain, is we hadn't had a lot of sunshine. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of cloudy, overcast a lot of this spring. We'll have some nice sunny days sometimes, and then other times we won't. So I imagine that there's a whole lot of these ills that we're seeing with the corn right now that some good 80-degree days would help pull it right out of.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we have that every year. I mean, it seems like every year corn goes through a time period there that it just doesn't look good. I mean, it's either really yellow where it's been wet and waterlogged, or get that purple color again. I mean, normally we think of phosphorus with that purple color deficiencies, but sometimes the phosphorus is there. It's just the ground's too wet for it to pick it up. And so it's when it dries up and warms up and we have those warm nights, I think that's really when we start seeing corn take off and really get that pretty color is when we start getting warm nights too. And then it really starts to take off and grow a lot faster and kind of grow out of that awkward, ugly stage because we have that every year.
Yeah, once it gets warm enough that it's growing 24 hours a day, you start seeing that straighten up pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, sometimes there could be some fertility issues and some, legit deficiency symptoms that are not just because of environmental conditions at the time. And, you know, those are things that we do need to keep an eye on, because with the input costs that we'd had and with that high fertilizer prices back a couple of years ago and maybe even a couple of years there, folks have really may have cut back on their fertilizer, but still pulling off pretty good yields. That can happen quicker than you think that you need to look for some of those. And certainly if that's the case, then you need to be getting some soil samples and trying to correct that because it's only going to continue to get worse.
You know, so. I can remember times past, and it doesn't seem like we see as much of this anymore, but we used to see a lot of temporary phosphorus deficiency in mm-hmm. corn. You'd see those reddish maroon streaks mm-hmm. and whatnot, and a lot of times there was plenty underneath it to do the job. It just needed to get warm enough mm-hmm. and get the roots developed enough to where they're down there taking it up. And that's one of those things we just kind of have to wait and see and trust that's the right. fact when we did soil sample and we did make the appropriate applications that once those roots get started developed, yep. they're going to be pulling it up out of the ground.
And I have seen varieties in the past, too, that they just add a purple tint to them.
Some of them did, yeah.
You know, I don't see that mm-hmm. as much as I used to. There was a few years there, though. There was a couple of corn varieties that just kind of had that look yeah. a little bit. So, main thing is, get out there and look at your crop.
Yeah. Even later, it was talking about temporary phosphorus deficiency. It looks different in different crops. So
sure.
knowing what those deficiencies look like and being able to tell mm-hmm. a little bit about them, I think of early set tobacco, having those little copper-sized shot dots mm-hmm. to them, and that's what it, that's how it appears and what it looks like in tobacco. Yeah.
That's right.
Once it spreads out and starts growing on the hill, typically it'll grow out of those if it's got mm-hmm. it underneath it. So.
You know, that brings up a point that y'all talking has brought to my mind is that, you know, right now is a really good time to write down, you know, what the crop conditions were or what the weather conditions were or how your herbicide worked this mm-hmm. this spring. You know, this is a perfect time to go out there. And I've seen some fields that are pretty weedy that were supposedly burnt down and looks pretty rough. So
we've been right. hearing that message the past few years about using some residual products to yeah. have a little bit of that carryover, a little longer lasting effect. And especially last year, I know it was a big deal when we had a lot of burn down early on, and then we had some late rain, and it took an extended amount of period right. of time to get that mm-hmm. crop planted.
Right. And, you know, things like populations, you know, you need to be checking your populations. Maybe there's something you need to do with your planter if you don't have the correct population right now in your corn or your soybeans, either one. So this is a perfect time, you know, to make some observations and just write that down and then just put that in your book and go on. And, you know, these things help you make management decisions later on for the next year.
Absolutely. I mean,
it helps you make management decisions for later on in the year.
That's right.
It might get you to re-question some of the decisions you made the year before. That
exactly.
didn't work. I need to do that different this
exactly.
next year.
Exactly. So that right now is just a perfect time to go through that. And, you know, hopefully you'll figure out some things that, you know, will help you in the make some different management decisions the next year. Or if you need to make the observation of, hey, that worked really good, we need to continue mm-hmm. to do that, then that's the observation we need to make, you know. But we need to always try to critique ourselves and the jobs that we're doing and how our products are working, if it's whether it's a chemical
that's
product
right.
or whether it's a hybrid that, you know, that you're looking at and you go, I don't like that. I don't like that particular, you know, mm-hmm. quality about that variety. Maybe I want to change varieties for next year. So this is a perfect time to do that.
Yep. And then if you see something that you really – hadn't seen before or not sure what it is, maybe you're trying to figure out, is that a deficiency symptom? Is it something else? Is it, you know, call your local extension office, call your ag agent, and you know, most of them are going to be really happy to go out there and walk a field with you, or, you know, if they can, if they're out of town, a lot of times you can, with the phones nowadays, you can take a really good picture of that and give them a little more information and send that to them, and they can try to point you in the right direction. So just kind of a plug for the extension offices, I guess, but we are here to help and
sure.
we want to help. And also it's good for us to know kind of what's going on out in the county, because we can't be in every field in the county for sure. But knowing what's going on, because if you're having a problem, somebody else may be having that same problem. And
absolutely.
So letting yep. us know that and kind of having a heads up about it will kind of help prepare us or to help others too. So,
Vicki, I actually did that just here a few weeks ago. A agronomist come in the office one day and had some wheat samples with him of some suspected virus issues. And I tried to get a hold of Carl Bradley, and he was actually out. He was in Minnesota at a conference, But he said, take some good pictures and send them to me. And that's what we did. And we were able to create that dialogue back and forth and get some of those things seen to before they ever made it to the lab.
That's the great thing about cell phones. I know that there's a lot of things that we talk about with cell phones that's bad.
There's a lot of bad things.
And I've heard even in the last week or so that sometimes I've heard people say, you know, sometimes I wish we didn't even have these. But and in some ways that is very true. But for especially for this time of year for us, it is really nice to have that opportunity because that allows us to be in contact with our specialists. Like what you said, that's a great point, Jay. Because now our specialists, if you, especially as agents, if we've developed that relationship with those specialists and we've worked with them and we, when we send them a message about something, they're going to try to get back with us as soon as they can and taking pictures. And I mean, just like helping you, Jay, he's in Minnesota, but he's able to help you. We don't have to wait till he gets back in the office and being able to check his email, you know, because this time of year, agents and specialists can be out for several days in a row working and out of the office.
Especially when you talk about preservation of sample quality, when we get those samples brought in to us. They come in all different shapes and sizes. Some of them come in straight out of the field in pristine shape. Some of them might have been riding around on the dash of a truck for a day or two.
Yep.
But when somebody's out of town and can see those pictures maybe a week, 6-7 days before they would actually got to see the sample, it makes a big, big difference.
Well, and you know what? For us in Western Kentucky, us having to send samples to Lexington too, you know, having a real good set of pictures to go along with that is a big deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you know,
still having to deal with the fallout of the tornado from a couple of years ago. We don't have our lab in Princeton like we're also spoiled with having a good lab facility and good specialists to go along with it.
Yeah.
Got great specialists and a great lab in Lexington. They're just having to share them with all the agents in the state.
Yeah.
Well, and where we're located, us three particularly, if it's a really, really time sensitive, when I think about tobacco and some other things, you know, I have put that sample in my vehicle and drove it
took
to Princeton.
And, drove,
and to get it there
than
you've ever been.
Been.
Yeah. But being able to drive it down there and get that sample there and get that looked at, it's a benefit to us for sure. And not having that now and having to rely on either mailing those to Lexington, it does change up how we do things. And oftentimes, if you call us on a Thursday or a Friday, we're probably not going to want to take a sample because it's gonna sit in a hot box and it's going to be sitting there. And by the time that gets to the lab, not sure what shape it'd be in. So
unless you can get it to a specialist really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
that's the only difference.
So just keep that in mind, too. But pictures, you know.
Yeah,
those,
another good reason that the pictures work so well is because of that very fact that, you know, if you bring us a sample Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we can probably get it up there maybe by, you know, the end of the week, you know, and hopefully somebody can look at it. If you bring it on Thursday and Friday, it's not going to happen.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
You know, and it's
going to sit in a mailbox.
Yeah, and you
all
just
weekend.
Right, and so you just must not even have taken the sample, and so you know you have to go back on Monday and try to get a sample and do it again. But you know, that's why the pictures are so very, very important, and I think the specialists have been very accommodating from the standpoint of, can you get me a good picture?
Yeah.
And taking a picture and taking a good picture are two very, very different things. You know, so I don't know if we need to have a class about, you know, taking good pictures, but, you know, I feel like now I can kind of zoom in and take some better pictures than I used to could.
There's a specialist that specializes in taking photos. We might could get him down sometime or another.
I'd be good. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
I'm just saying.
I'm good. I could probably do that as well as anybody. So we'll just skip over that.
iPhones are pretty easy. We can take pictures.
You know. Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, and I've got this new iPhone. I can't even work half the stuff on this iPhone, but I can work the camera.
You've come a long way, though, David.
Hey, tell him, Vicky.
Yes, he has.
He has
come a long way.
I was technologically challenged several years ago, but I'm still challenged. I don't want anybody to ever think that I'm not challenged, but I am. But I can do a few things with technology, a few.
I don't pretend to be an electronics wizard by any means at all, but I'm not scared to jump in and play with it till I figure out what's going on. And
On the note of sending the pictures for diagnosis or identification, the other thing we need to do is make sure the more information you can give us when you send that to us, like if you're sending us a corn plant or a soybean plant or whatever, let us know the planting date.
The variety,
if anything's been sprayed, any information that you can give us, that really helps us, because 9 times out of 10, you're gonna send us that picture, and then we're gonna turn around and ask you, hey, what was the variety, and you know the planting date. So go ahead and send that to us when you send it to us.
One of the questions I always like to ask myself if I'm dealing with a producer, or I try to find it out if they don't readily volunteer it, is where at in the field it was located.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it near a waterway? Is it near a rock outcrop?
That's right.
Is it near a, you know, a...
is it an in-row? In-row,
where
middle of the field?
Where it could be heavy compaction? Was there dirt work done there in the past? Just little things like that. Is it a low swag? Is it a red hill? You know, all those different things make a difference.
And sometimes, too, taking a picture of the plant that is the problem, but also taking some pictures of some
surrounding
area so we can see that area, and then maybe comparing it to a plant that's in that same field that is really doing well, just to give us some comparisons on what's happening and things like that. So just the more information you can share with us, the better. It helps us get you an answer quicker, basically.
We're mainly dealing and discussing in agronomic crops, but all this rings exactly true when a homeowner brings us something from their garden or their landscape.
Yes.
If it's near a downspout or where new construction is taking place,
or underneath, sidewalk,
underneath the base of a tree, anything like that that might be different, that might be, you know, creating an environmental stress, a local stress that that we need to know about, helps in determining what those issues might be.
That's exactly right.
You know, when Paul Bachi, he used to tell us, you know, give me a healthy plant next to, you know,
a sickly one,
and so I kind of know what things are supposed to look like, I guess, if you will. But we used to do that all the time as well when he was in Princeton.
Yeah.
Well, it gives you an idea of where that growth stage should be,
right?
Or, you know, because it's hard to know that, because we've just talked about the different plantings and this year McLean County starting for Christian County, and that never happens, you know. So you can't guess that anymore where it should be. And so it allows you to see just how far behind that plant may be, or and we're talking about plants too, but also any insects, or you know, if you've got some kind of a weed you need to get identified.
Kind of diseases.
A lot of times
too,
you can send some pictures of those too. David does not like pictures of snakes though, so don't send him any pictures of snakes.
Do not.
So
do not.
Talking about Paul Bachi, of course, he's a long since retired, but he was a plant pathologist, extension specialist in our plant pathology lab there in Princeton. He's a resident of my county and actually on my district board. So Paul's somebody that I get to work with quite a bit.
Oh, that's great. I'd love to sit down and talk to him.
Yeah, I tried to get him to come back. He was at Kurt Judy's retirement, and I said, you about ready to come back yet?
Well, heck, we could probably get Paul on here to talk about.
You know, I tell you what.
Him to talk about some diseases and things like that, but more than is how to use the diagnostic lab and what they do to be able to identify.
Well, just think about all the things that he's seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't fathom, you know. I mean, all the different
different
types of diseases and different deficiencies and different things of this nature that he's seen. I mean,
And the equipment that they use. Yeah. I think that's amazing, too, if you've not seen a diagnostic lab. Because some things, they can look at it and you can tell without having to do any kind of anything to it. But then sometimes they have to do these... I don't know. I'm not one of those people, but they have to sometimes they're just putting it under a scope, but sometimes they actually have to put some different treatments on there, or different things to...
Has to be incubated and different things like
cultured and different things.
Yeah, it would be interesting to talk to him just to talk about some of the things that he's seen.
That especially holds true, I think, with some of the viral and bacterial complexes that they might have. They put them in a dish and grow them out, and
yep.
Yeah,
helps to determine exactly what it
is. But you know, he could, when you walked in there with a sample, he could almost tell you what it was. He said, I'll have to do some further testing to confirm that, but he said, this sure is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a great learning opportunity for county extension agents. Especially young ones.
He was outstanding at that.
Yeah, he would try to teach you what things are supposed to look like, you know.
And he loved to, he loved to teach. And it didn't matter how busy he was.
Mm-mm.
He would take time to talk to you if you brought something in.
And it didn't matter if you were a producer or an agent. I mean, it doesn't bother him either way. And he would, like Vicky said, he would take time to try to talk to you and be very personable with you and try to teach you something.
Yeah.
So
I'm very, very lucky and thankful that I came on when he was still at Princeton and was able to learn a lot from him and to be able to bring it back to the county and over the years, I've sent less things to the diagnostic lab just because we as agents, we begin to learn things and we don't have to send as much. When you're a new agent, a lot of times you're sending a lot more things through the diagnostic lab, but I still use it and support it. I want it to be there and we need it. But,
it's extremely important to have that as a backup. But what specialists like Paul and others were doing by helping us understand and learn to identify, it wasn't to decrease work for them. It was so we could shorten that turnaround time and getting that back to the producer and what they needed and how they could go about making that treatment.
That's right.
So
that is exactly right.
All good stuff. I might have to contact Paul and see if we can't get him over to the office one day and do this.
That'd be great.
I think that would be a great guest.
Very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I do.
I'm about sure of it, you know. And he was just so good at teaching younger folks. And, I mean, you know, as a young agent, I'm kind of like Vicky. I'm very thankful that I had the opportunity to do that. He used to get on to me about the paperwork. I was never very good with paperwork, kind of like technology. But because I didn't fill it out to his specifications, and he was particular, I'll give him that.
Well, it helped him make those determinations.
That's right. That's very true. But I mean, you know, when you're a young agent, you want to get the sample and you want to get it over there and you want to see what it is. So, but I got scolded 2-3 times about the paperwork. But that's all right. I got to talk to him a long time at Kurt's retirement. Enjoyed visiting with him, catching up.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, you know, towards the end of these shows, we always like to wrap them up with a timely tip. And we got to talking about the fact that we're in the throes of the spring planting season right now. And we think it's just a good time to remind everybody to be mindful of the large, slow-moving equipment on the roadways. Always be patient and courteous when sharing the road with any large implements, whether that's not just a farm implement. It could be a tractor trailer. It could be anything. You need to stay far enough back away off that implement where he can see you with his mirrors. You get right up behind them and right up underneath them, they can't see you're back there, and it's hard for them to help be safe. You need to give them all the graces we can. And that's year-round. It's not just during the spring planting or the harvest season. We're going to turn right around, as Vicky pointed out before we were putting our notes together, that it's going to be wheat harvest right around the corner.
Yeah.
And we'll be back into more large trucks and influx of vehicles on the road, and we need to be out there and be ready for them.
And one other thing, too, I've noticed that the state road crews and county road crews are going to start mowing roadways before long, too. And so keep your eye out for those, too. I have popped over hill before, and they're there. So it's going to be that time of year, too.
I think that's a good place to end on. So we want to say a special thanks to our hosts for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.